Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. As always, it's just wonderful that I can sit here and talk with you once a week, sometimes by myself, most often with just scintillating interviewees, great people. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, and you're listening to and watching Refounding America, Reclaiming Ourselves. This is real TV. It's on Roku. It's Brighteon TV, and you can watch it on your TV set all over the world on Roku. And you may be listening to it live on PRN.FM, just the radio portion of it, the sound without the video. Today, I have a fabulous guest, Leo Holman, one of the best journalists in the world, a source of huge information. We're going to talk about all kinds of things and start out with, are we about to have World War III? Well, folks, take a good look at Leo Holman. For those of you who are on the radio, he spells his name H-O-H-M-A-N-N, Leo Holman. You're looking at a great journalist. We are going to do stuff today. And Leo, introduce yourself if you like. And where they can get to you, and we're going to march off into all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for having me on, Dr. Breggin. Name is Leo Holman, been a journalist for, 32 years now, 33 years, maybe 34 years. It's hard to keep count and keep track when you've been in as long as I have, but the first 28 years were in mainstream newspapers in the Atlanta and Raleigh, North Carolina areas. And then I did a stint about 4 years with the WND, World Net Daily, where I really got my feet wet covering national and international issues, immigration, especially the threat of Islam coming across the border with the open borders and the refugee resettlement program. Wrote a book on that called Stealth Invasion in 2017. And for the last few years, Dr. Breggin, I've been completely independent on my own with my own website, leoholman.com. It's been going real well. My articles are getting picked up by all kinds of other websites, which is kind of how I get my articles out. I offer them free to any website that wants to run them. All they have to do is give me credit and a link back to my website, and they can run my articles for free. And they've been published in, you know, anything from Gateway Pundit to Front Page Magazine to, you know, all kinds of different conservative sites. I kind of lost track a while ago, but that's how you find me, leoholman.com. I also have a Substack that I'm trying to promote, Dr. Breggin, leoholman.substack.com, where I'm trying to put out shorter articles and leave the more in-depth articles for my main website, leoholman.com.
That's great. That's great. And I don't enough talk about my own IDs. Ginger would like me to talk about it more. We are Breggin.com, B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com. And probably the best thing you can do for yourself, and it's helpful to us, is to join getting our newsletter, which is called the Bregan Alerts. That's free. It goes out to almost 50,000 people, and our opening rate, to show you the interest, is beyond any we've heard of. 50% of people get this and open it, and a very also high rate of reading it. And that's a good way to start with us, would be to go to Bregan.com and then sign up. You'll learn about our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, which is very apt even for what we're going to talk about today. We're going to start out with the war in Ukraine, but believe it or not, we went so deep into the predators in our book, you'll be able to understand the Ukraine better, and you'll be better able to understand what Leo Holman is going to be talking about. The mic goes over to you now, sir.
Well, I would just like to reference this bombshell article that came out, I believe yesterday, in Chronicles Magazine, Dr. Bregan, by a journalist by the name of Pedro Gonzalez. And he reports that former Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, he had Russia and Ukraine at the table shortly after Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, both willing to give major concessions and ready to talk peace. And he says that the United States, operating through NATO, quickly got involved and just dashed the entire peace talk process. The United States wanted nothing to do with peace. They wanted to push this thing. Putin was going to, let me see, he wanted, let me look and see exactly, because I don't want to misquote this journalist, exactly what the concessions were. According to Bennett, Putin made two major concessions during their March 5th meeting. Okay, so this is March 5th, which would have been basically a week, week and a half after the invasion. First, Putin renounced denazification, that is regime change in Kiev. Okay, so he put that on the table, that he was willing to not press for a regime change in the Ukraine. Secondly, he dropped his demand for Ukraine's demilitarization. Bennett said Zelensky, on the other hand, agreed to abandon Ukraine's pursuit of NATO membership in exchange for these concessions from Putin. And both Putin and Zelensky seemed eager to end the fighting, but the U.S. had other plans. Bennett said a, quote, decision by the West was made to keep striking Putin through the Ukraine. They blocked it, and I thought they were wrong, Bennett said. He noted that the governments of Germany and France were pragmatic towards the idea, compared to the U.S. and the U.K., which took a more belligerent attitude against Russia, considering the UK is little more than a neutered lapdog of DC. It is more than likely that it was the US who decided to keep the war going. Indeed, Bennett said he deferred, quote, to America in this regard, unquote, which makes sense because, you know, Israel is very much dependent on US support for its existence, at least in their minds. And so Bennett, when he saw that the U.S. had absolutely no appetite for peace in this quickly growing war, you know, he backed off, and that was the end of the peace talks. So this really, Dr. Bregan, this story is confirmation of everything I suspected,
right,
based on the other things I've been reading over the last year. It was not shocking, but at the same time, to have it straight from the horse's mouth. I mean, this is not hearsay. This is a world leader at the time, Prime Minister of Israel. And the reason he said that he was able to have such influence over these two is because there is a lot of Jewish people in both the Ukraine and in Russia. And he didn't want to see them swept up into a devastating war. You know, they've already had a horrible war in 2014. And so everybody knows just how nasty, this is basically a bitter ethnic feud between the Ukraine and Russia that goes back hundreds of years. The original founders of the Russian state came out of the Ukraine. And the Ukraine has been part of Russia on and off for 500 years. So it is just a continuation of that bitter family feud. The two nations ethnically are very close. And it would be, I guess, kind of like the United States and Canada, only we don't have really a history like that. But in geography, it would be like if the United States and Canada had a dispute over, let's say, northern New York or Maine. And, you know, and we were willing to go to war over it. And this war was on and off for hundreds of years. Why would Russia want to get involved in that and send tanks and Patriot missiles and stacking now, Russia's stacking very sophisticated weaponry here on the U.S. border? I think we would take offense at that. And this is what we've been doing to Russia. We've been getting involved in its family feud with the Ukraine, and we have no national interest there. We have no national interest. While I feel very bad for Ukrainians who are on the western side of Ukraine, there's other Ukrainians on the eastern side who speak Russian and want to be part of Russia. So it is a feud. It is a land dispute. It's a real estate dispute that's not in our neck of the woods. But I think what's going on here, Dr. Bregan, is Russia is a very resource-rich country, as you know. It has oil, it has gas, natural gas, it has other minerals. I believe the U.S. State Department has had its eye on Russia's land and Russia's resources for many years. And what they would like to do, they would like to do the same thing in Russia that they have done in the Ukraine. And that is instigate a color revolution against Vladimir Putin, install a Western puppet government, and then have access to those resources, if not directly, through the puppet regime. This is what I see going on, given the history of that area and the history of the United States corrupt State Department dealings in Eastern Europe. There is a woman named Christina Newland who's been at, I think, don't hold me to her first name. I think it's Christina, but her last name is Newland. And she has been a lifelong bureaucrat at the State Department. She has Ukrainian ethnic background, and she's also a globalist. She adheres to the World Economic Forum agenda, and she helped instigate the color revolution in Ukraine 7-8 years ago, and now she and the State Department are trying to do the exact same thing in Russia.
Explain the color revolution. Most people won't know what that is.
That is where the U.S. government goes into a foreign country, instigates an uprising, street protests against the current leader. And then when an election comes up, they rig the election for the opposition leader, who is their puppet. And they also use the media of the country, just like it's very similar to what they did here in the 2020 election. They used their experience running color revolutions in Eastern Europe and other countries around the world and turned that against our own people in 2020 when President Trump ran against Joe Biden.
Thank you for that courage in saying that.
And I'm not even a big fan of President Trump because I voted for him twice, but I've kind of soured on him the way he is. He launched Operation Warp Speed.
Yep.
It gave us these disastrous genocidal vaccines that are now being used, continue to be used despite all the data out there. Which a lot of it you have in your great book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. even more data has come out just in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And yet we've still had no mea culpa from this man, Donald J. Trump, who, what's really come out this year, the last month or so, Dr. Bregan, I don't know how closely you've been following it, is the fact that this entire operation, if I know you, you're close, you're probably very familiar with this, this entire vaccine operation from the very beginning was a U.S. military operation. It was run out of the DOD and DARPA from the beginning. And Donald Trump enabled that. And so I can never forgive him for that. I can never vote for the man again. And so I'm not a double Donald Trump fan. However, there's no question that he was that the 2020 election was rigged against him.
Yeah. Well, you're saying a lot of interesting things, and as almost always, you're working on the same edges that we are. We will be having on this show, folks, some of the top journalists who have been disclosing this incredible story about how the guidance for the entire COVID-19 was substantially the Department of Defense, and then how they then blended in and worked with HEW, Health and Human Services, yeah, the largest, most funded agency in the country, much bigger than many national governments, I'm sure. And we'll be looking into that. I was thinking of tying that in. And what I'd like to do is with you explore two tie-ins to what you were saying. One is there's so many of them. Folks, for a number of years now, our government has been a very warlike government. Now, to understand that, you have to know that constitutional democracies are not warlike. No constitutional democracy has ever made war on another. They tend not to look for wars because the people always suffer during wars. And if you have a reasonable checks and balances and a reasonable democratic input, that's what a constitutional democracy is. People don't, as a group, don't get all the say, but they get a lot of it. And then there's checks and balances, you know, through the government, through the House, through the Senate, through the judiciary, you know, through the executive, that all these balances that exist to prohibit a nation from being taken over and used in that manner for the elites, which is what it's all about, for the globalists right now are the elites.
Yes, and Dr. Bregan, I just looked up her name. It's Victoria Nuland, not Christina Nuland.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes, yeah.
And I want to make a note on that.
She is a notorious globalist, elitist, lifelong bureaucrat, deep stater.
And there's a whole bunches of them. So we have a number of things coming together. Now, you put emphasis on the U.S., and just to even fatten that up further on U.S. interests here, when Biden, at a time of economic desperation in our country, among the poor and the middle class, and even the upper class, everybody except the elites, the people who are organizing things on a higher level, he gives 40, 50 billion. I'm not sure what is the total now he has promised or given to the Ukraine, the Biden administration.
I think it's up to 100 billion.
Up to 100 now. All right. Now, where is that money going? I mean, it is not going to the people of Ukraine. I can tell you that.
Right.
They don't look richer. They're not going to dress better. They're not going to eat better. Their kids are not going to have better nutrition.
Right.
It isn't even going mostly to the military. It's going mostly to the people who run the thing, which are the global elite. And Biden is a member of the global elite by virtue, if nothing else, of his family having tens of millions of dollars that they got illegally while he was vice president from the Chinese communists. So you've got a direct tie between the Biden family, several good books about it, and you can probably Google them, and the largesse from the Chinese communists. So part of it's going all over the world, but never to the people. That's the big point. That's how all the global institutions work, whether it's our Fed, which is a global institution, whether it's the global organization of the central banks like the Fed, whether it's the World Bank, the World Trade Association organization, whether it's the UN, whether it's any of the leading countries in the world. It's always about siphoning money and resources from the poorer nations, the poorer people, and the weaker people up to the top.
Yes.
And if this sounds bizarre to you folks, remember that slavery is older than the Bible. That's what slavery is about. Empires are older than the Bible. We had a Chinese empire that was toward the tail end of the Old Testament times, that was so powerful and that it was the leading totalitarian nation empire of the world. And these empires kill people.
Yes.
Everyone you look at, whether it's the British Empire or the Chinese Empire or the USSR when it was an empire, or the Mao's empire now that's grown up into being Xi Jinping's empire. These organizations take from the poorer and grow wealthy and powerful. That's what we're looking at. So the money going to the Ukraine, that's a farce, the way it's presented with saving the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians are run by a very corrupt man, Zelensky. And Zelensky is a favorite of the globalists. He goes around the world asking for money, begging from the U.S., begging from the World Economic Forum for money. The Ukraine, probably one of the top corrupt nations in the world. It's a nation, remember, maybe some of you haven't seen the Joe Biden video when they were going to investigate his son's doings with one of their big, I think it was an oil company. Joe Biden said, you do that and you don't get our money. And he bragging about it on a video in front of an audience. So these interlocking forces. So ultimately, I think it's not just the resources, and I imagine it's just emphasis, and you'll agree with me, Leo. Putin stands for something the globalists want to destroy, not just take over news, but destroy, and that is a nationalistic, patriotic country. Putin is within himself a violent and undoubtedly very destructive human being, KGB guy, but he's a Russian and he promotes Russia and he wants to build that empire back up. He wants to reinstitute the USSR. Well, that's a mini empire, and China doesn't want it. And what I call the Western Empire, which is the United States right now under Biden's part of the Western Empire of global empire that's in competition, but working with the Chinese empire. They don't want Russia in between. That's why nobody's rescuing Russia. Even China doesn't want to have competition from a patriotic Russia. They don't want the Chinese citizens thinking, whoa, you know, maybe we can be a nation too, the way our leader puts us first, and so on and so forth.
You know, that's a great point, Dr. Bregan. If you look at who is really benefiting.
So I'm through my break. We'll come back to Leo Holman's comments. Well, we're back with the amazing journalist Leo Holman. And, you know, Leo and I are not like best friends and talking all the time. We should be, but we're not. Like most guys, we just don't do that enough, probably. But the fact that we are on such a similar conceptual framework with just our own emphases has come out of our looking independently at this world, although we you know, we do talkies. Looked at my book. I've had him on the show. Leo, go ahead with what you were going to be pursuing.
Yeah. If you look at this war between Russia and the Ukraine and ask yourself objectively, who is really benefiting from this war? It's certainly not Ukraine. I think they've got like 100,000 casualties already. And Zelensky, this madman they have as their president, seems willing to sacrifice every man, woman, and child before he's ready to talk peace again, although we do have this evidence now that he was open to it at the very outset of the war. It's not Russia. They're using up a lot of their munitions, and they're also losing a lot of men. I don't think that Vladimir Putin expected this type of a response from NATO. He probably thought that the war would be over within a matter of weeks, if not a couple of 2-3 months, and now it's almost a year old. So Russia is definitely not benefiting. The United States is not benefiting. We are sending way too many of our munitions and dollars over to the Ukraine. There was a study that came out from an independent think tank, a well-respected one, I don't remember the name of it, a couple of weeks ago that said if the United States were to get into a naval war, a shooting war with China over Taiwan, we would run out of munitions in a week. And the reason is so much of what we had in stockpile is being sent over to the Ukraine. And so the United States is certainly being weakened, further weakened, by this this war in Ukraine. The only one that I can think of on the global stage that seems to be sitting back pretty and benefiting from this is China. China, while allied militarily with Russia, the two countries never really had a good relationship. They don't trust each other. The reason that they have taken up sides together is simply because they want to bring down the United States. And if that were to happen, I think you would then see China and Russia go after each other and maybe settle some old scores. But China is sitting back, I think, waiting for the opportune moment after the United States has wasted and squandered a sufficient amount of its weapons and munitions in Ukraine, and then they will make their move against Taiwan. I really think that is the strategy. And long term, now this may blow some people away, but this is not as radical sounding now as it would have sounded just 2 or 3 weeks ago. Long term, I believe China also has plans to invade, occupy, and conquer the United States with a land invasion. And the reason that's not quite as crazy sounding as it was just a couple of weeks ago is we recently just had a 4-star Air Force general come out and say, Dr. Milahan, he came out and said that he expects the United States to be at war with China by 2025. And then you got this study out there saying that we're not prepared for any kind of a war with China. We're certainly not prepared for a two-front war with Russia in Eastern Europe and China in the Pacific Ocean. There's almost no honest analyst who's worth his salt who would say that the United States is currently in a good position to take on a two-front war against those two opponents. And yet that seems to be where we're heading. The war in Eastern Europe is escalating. We hear absolutely no talk. And I don't want to put all of this on Biden, by the way. There are just as many neocon Republicans who are excited. They appear to be excited about the prospect of taking down and militarily defeating Vladimir Putin as the Democrats. Yeah. It's this uniparty in Washington. It's the war party. It's the administrative state. As you said, they love war. They've never seen a war that they didn't really like. It makes money for their friends at Raytheon and Northrop Grumman and all of the other defense contractors that donate to their campaigns. And this is what they're all about and always have been about. I call them neocons, neoconservatives, and neolibs, neoliberals. They're birds of the same feather. While they have completely different policies on different viewpoints in domestic policy, they are united in this globalist foreign policy that sees the United States as the policeman of the world and the head of this new world order, globalist, really they want global government with the United States running the show. That is, I think, if I had to summarize it in one sentence, that's what they're after. And it involves making a lot of money for their friends in in the private sector. They go in, they shoot the place up, they destroy the infrastructure. Their military arms makers see their stocks soar and they make lots of new revenue and profits. And then the other contractors come in after the war's over to rebuild the country.
That's with the bankers. With the bankers.
Yes. Yes. And so they make it on both sides, not just militarily, but on the civilian private sector as well.
This is really an interesting conversation, folks, because I'm just a little bit differently looking at it, but so close, and I'm learning. My own sense of it is that the sympathies for communist China within our group is so large, not our group, within our nation's leadership is so large that they actually think that somehow China and the U.S. are going to make a go of it together and get rich together.
No.
They do not, but I think they think it.
Yeah.
They do not know that once the U.S. is weakened, China will simply take over.
Absolutely.
And eat up people like Bill Gates like shrimp at the table.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Western powers, the Western organization has fantasies of authoritarianism living together happily. I think they see a more authoritarian America, and America becoming more like communist China, and then communist China becomes a little bit more like America.
Yeah.
They have no idea that they, for some reason, although it's in all good books if you read them, that China has two things going for it to take over the world that we don't. It has an imperial history going back probably 3,000 or more years of building of great kingdoms and great empires, which Xi Jinping really appreciates. And then the Communist Party is an empire builder. It's, you know, workers of the world unite. It's workers of the world. It's not the, you know, patriotic Russians, patriotic Americans or whatever, unite. And so the communists have behind them these two powerful strains, to the extent they're Marxists and they're also fascists, but the extent that they are Marxist ideologues, that's what they teach. And atheists, that's what they teach. It's all the same. And they also come from this tremendous monarchy tradition. They will have no problem wiping out half the world if they have to with atomic bombs. I mean, there's this talk within I've seen quotes from within the Chinese government, you know, about, you know, how China could lose 1 billion people. And the U.S. couldn't lose 200 million before it was destroyed. So they foresee the destruction of the US in an atomic war much more vividly than they see their own destruction. And I don't know, does this make sense to you where I'm going with this, Leo?
It does, and I agree with most everything you said. However, you're spot on about the Marxist mentality. It always has had this globalist element to it.
Always.
They're never content to keep their Marxist tyranny within their national borders. The only thing that I might differ a little bit with you on is this: the idea that China wants nuclear war with the United States. I think China wants the land of the United States.
Yes.
And it would prefer to have that land fertile and intact and not blown apart to smithereens with nuclear fallout.
Well, I think that's true. I'm thinking of, you know, the last, their idea of the last scenario is they would survive it.
Well, see, I do feel that Russia would have no problem sending some nuclear-tipped ICBMs our way, because Russia has no designs on the land of the United States. Mm-hmm. And if we provoke Putin far enough and back him into a corner, his close political ally, Dmitry Medvedev, said just a couple of weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, that if Russia were to lose a conventional war, they would switch to nuclear, to an unconventional war.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that, and I wrote an article about this on my website, what is it about that Western politicians can't get through their heads, can't seem to understand? You are not going to win this war against Putin in the Ukraine. And guess what? If you do, to win this war is also to lose it, because they consider it a existential threat. Like I said, it would be like the Russians setting up camp and stacking weapons in Canada, wanting to take Maine and New York. We would have no part of it.
Hey, we were willing to go to war over Russia putting missiles in Cuba.
Right, right.
We were on the verge of nuclear war.
Right. And so,
why don't
I don't
we
know
understand?
Why we can't understand that Putin is not going to lose this war. And if it looks like he is about to lose it, he is not going to agree to some unconditional Western peace settlement, which would involve him leaving power. The Western politicians have all said that's the goal, that Putin must go. And so he's just not going to accept that. Before he does, he will nuke us. End of sentence, full stop.
Well, I think that that's a very huge risk. I really agree with you about that. And again, folks, to put it in the global context, why do they want to get rid of Putin? Because they want a global dominion. And Putin isn't going to put up with a global dominion, which makes the USSR one more third world country and removes him from the picture.
Right.
I think this is a very important aspect of it. For my
there's
thinking,
so much
it's
Western
all about
propaganda.
That.
There's so much Western propaganda in our news that people find they like one. Let me give you one example. Putin is near death. Putin has a terminal cancer and he's ready to die. This is nothing but lies.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing. People in this country have no experience with massive casualties here on our own soil. You have to go back to the Civil War to experience anything like that.
Yeah.
And that our World War, I guess what I'm saying is the last big war was World War II. And if you compare the Russian experience in World War II, it was not the American experience.
Right.
For us, it was a war that we sent men off to fight. For Russia, it was literally a fight to the death to save their homeland from Nazi occupation. And Russia is not a sea power. Russia is a land power. It does not have very good access to the big seaports. And so its vulnerability lies in the Western Front. And it has been invaded many times through that corridor of Germany and Poland. You've got the mountains to the south, you've got some water to the north, but there's that corridor there that's just basically flat farmland. And yeah, they have been invaded at least three times majorly by Napoleon, by Hitler, and by the Swedish king back in the like 1700s.
And well, so now they got NATO really encroaching.
Now they're staring in the face of NATO. So we Americans refuse to look at this Ukraine situation, the whole Eastern European situation, in a strategic, through a strategic glass viewed from the Russian psyche. In order to understand war and peace and trying to get to peace from war, you always have to put yourself in your enemy's shoes. And I don't see that ability in the U.S. State Department. They seem to be ignorant of all this history, or they just don't care. And I know the average American wasn't taught this history. Defending Stalin, the Russians lost, what, like 2 or 3 million people in that war defending Stalingrad? I mean, it was horrific.
Excuse me.
It was horrific, and it all came from that Western corridor with the iron crosses on the tanks. And now we're sending new tanks from Germany, the Leopard 2s, that have that same iron cross on it.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant. I'm having a little allergy, so I apologize.
I have the same thing going on. Yeah.
For some reason, it creeps up on me in the evening.
Yes.
But I'm in really good health. I don't, thank God, at 86, I still go on pretty much all cylinders.
Yes.
I think all this is extremely important. I think that the State Department is so wedded to a positive view of China, mm-hmm, and of globalism.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really believe that Russia's the enemy, and the enemy because it won't cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there are so many things going on that no individual human can even grasp about all this. But I hope we're shedding light on it together. We've only got 3 minutes or 4 minutes left. I want to talk about positive things because there is a single positive approach to all of this, which is to take back America.
Yeah.
They are terrified of America. If patriotic, God-loving people who believe in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, who believe in a very strong America that does not make war out of self-interest, but only out of defense, that doesn't go in and make regime changes like Russia would like to do in the Ukraine, and the Ukraine and the West would like to do in Russia, but you build your own nation back up and become a beacon of liberty. There are at this moment no great beacons of liberty. Only the memory of America as a beacon of liberty. It can't withstand the invasion from the south across the border. It can't stand these collaborations with China, which still go on. America has to become strong. We've got to fight for legitimate elections. I'm in 100% agreement with Leo. There's no question that elections are being stolen now.
Yes.
And we have to recognize that, not deny it, not call it conspiracy theories. The whole idea of conspiracy theories was invented, believe it or not, by the elite to make people look ridiculous when they talked about the elite, when they talked about the globalists. Throw that aside. I mean, everything I thought was a conspiracy theory before COVID, before we started doing, Ginger and I started doing our own research on what was behind COVID-19, most of the conspiracy theories turned out to be cutting edge truths. And that's this awful situation we're in now. It is impossible to exaggerate the bizarre avarice of Bill Gates, of Klaus Schwab, of the people who run the big trusts and the big corporations, the people who run the State Department and Department of Defense, and the people who are pulling the strings on Joe Biden. They really want to dominate this earth. They really, really do. And they don't foresee the disaster that we're talking about here today, that Leo Holman's emphasizing, that I'm emphasizing, which is it can result in a third world war. And what'll stop it is an America too strong to take on, too firm to take on, too convinced that it has its own belief system, a belief in God-given human rights. That's our belief system. That's what it was, folks. That's what they're trying to take away by flooding the nation with people who don't know anything about that. But that's the heart of this nation. We hold these truths to be self-evident. We are created equal, created in God's image. However you want to look at the life, that's the rock bottom. That's what makes us treasures. That's what makes us individuals treasure. I've run over to the end. Thank you, Leo Holman, for an amazing discussion. Thank you. Thank you, our